Today's Washing Tech episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at washingtech.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And also Warby Parker. Get a free 5-day home try-on at warbyparkertrial.com/joe. 5 pairs, 5 days, and the try-on is 100% free. That's warbyparkertrial.com/joe.
They sell fresh Dominican pastries. They make sandwiches. They sell grocery staples. They sell cat food. It's kind of one of your classic corner stores.
Welcome to the Washing Tech Policy Podcast. We deliver the latest tech policy news and brightest tech policy experts to you. Wherever you are, so you can stay productive, relevant, and informed in less time. From Washington, D.C., it's the Washing Tech Policy Podcast with Joe Miller.
Federal officials worry about the effect the shutdown is having on cybersecurity. A Motherboard investigative report exposes wireless carrier's sale of location data, and Claire Brown is my guest. Federal security officials are worried about the short and long-term harm to the nation's cybersecurity during the shutdown. They're worried about losing furloughed talent and about criminals and foreign actors taking advantage of the shutdown to launch cyber attacks. Illinois Congresswoman Robin Kelly issued a strong rebuke against Trump for the shutdown, saying it's immoral and unnecessary. She noted that when she served as the ranking member of the IT subcommittee in the last session of Congress, the subcommittee repeatedly discussed the federal government's inability to attract top IT and tech talent. She said the shutdown makes federal IT jobs seem even less attractive than they were before. Remember in 2017 when the Republican-controlled Congress repealed the Obama FCC's privacy rules that would have required carriers to obtain opt-in consent from customers before sharing their data? Well, Motherboard's Joseph Cox reported last week that he paid just $300 to a bounty hunter to identify the location of a phone. This is exactly the kind of harm the privacy rules were designed to prevent, right? The Motherboard investigation found that all the bounty hunter had to do was purchase the location data that ultimately came from T-Mobile, AT&T, and Sprint, and voila, here's your phone, or the phone of that person you're stalking. So House Energy and Commerce Committee Chair Frank Pallone demanded an emergency briefing from FCC Chairman Ajit Pai. Pai declined, citing the shutdown, claiming that the issue wasn't a threat to the safety of human life or property. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar announced last week that Trump's Attorney General nominee, William Barr, assured her in a private meeting that he would recuse himself from the AT&T Time Warner merger. The Justice Department is appealing a lower court's decision to approve the $85 billion merger of the two companies. Barr's Senate confirmation hearing takes place today, Tuesday, January 15th. Google shareholder James Martin filed a lawsuit against the company last week for its $90 million payout to former executive Andy Rubin after he left the company amidst sexual harassment allegations. The complaint alleges a multi-year scheme to cover up sexual harassment and discrimination at Alphabet and claims the board, including Sergey Brin, Larry Page, and Eric Schmidt, breached their fiduciary duties as board members and as executives who set the internal tone that enabled extramarital affairs at the company. South Dakota Republican John Thune has stepped down as chair of the Senate Commerce Committee and now heads up the Communications Subcommittee. Mississippi Republican Roger Wicker now chairs the full committee. Finally, the Federal Aviation Administration issued proposed rules Monday that would allow small commercial drones to fly over cities at night. Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao says she's keenly aware of the safety concerns. And you can find links to all these stories in the show notes and also in our Twitter feed. And our handle is at Washing Tech. Stay with us.
Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You can listen at the gym, in the car, or on your morning run.
How about Good and Mad, The Revolutionary Power of Women's Anger by Rebecca Traister? You can download Good and Mad free by trying audible.com. Sign up for your free trial today at washingtech.com/book.
Washing Tech. The inclusive voice of tech policy. Because America won't stand still for the same old insiders. 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 Washing Tech. Moving the needle.
My guest today is Claire Brown. She's a staff writer for The New Food Economy, focusing on food policy and the environment. Her reporting has won awards from the Newswomen's Club of New York and the New York Press Club. She's based in Brooklyn. Please welcome Claire Brown. Claire, good to have you on.
Hi, Joe. Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So you wrote an article for The Intercept in early October that I just found fascinating because there's a real need to look at what all the federal agencies are doing with their tech policies, not just the Federal Communications Commission or the FCC. And in this article, you looked at an algorithm that the U.S. Department of Agriculture uses to screen for fraud in the SNAP program, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the government assistance program that replaced food stamps with EBT cards back in 2008.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the EBT cards are essentially a debit card that people can use at any grocery store.
So give us some context here, Claire, for those who haven't read your article. Real human beings are affected by this. Tell us about Porfirio Mejia.
Yeah, so Mr. Mejia is a Dominican-born New Yorker. He moved to the city about 20 years ago. He has this kind of classic American dream narrative. He saved up money. He opened his own grocery store about 6 years ago. It's this bustling neighborhood hub. You know, there's people going in and out. I think I visited at around 8 o'clock on a Wednesday night, and it was just totally lively. They sell fresh Dominican pastries. They make sandwiches. They sell grocery staples. They sell cat food. It's kind of one of your classic corner stores. And one of the things that he started doing, which was in his mind an effort at being kind of a good member of the neighborhood, was that he offered elderly customers the opportunity to call in their order, and then he would send someone up the stairs with their groceries. You know, he said some people took an hour to get up and down the stairs in their big apartment buildings. And so all he really wanted to do was offer them the opportunity to buy their groceries on credit, and then he would deliver them.
And you wrote that the USDA accused Mr. Mejia of fraud?
Yes. So this credit system that he was offering to elderly customers came back to bite him, because the USDA uses an algorithm to screen for food stamps fraud, and the agency describes food stamp fraud as trading cash for benefits. So the idea is that a customer would come in, Mr. Mejia would swipe their card and give them cash instead of food. Now, that's not what he was doing. He was offering this credit system, but the USDA uses these thresholds to screen for fraud, and those can be, you know, if they have too many transactions that end in the same number of cents, or transactions that happen too many times in the same day. And in Mr. Mejia's case, he had all these food stamp sales that were $200, $300. And in the eyes of the algorithm, that's way too much to spend at the corner store, when in fact, it was just the accumulation of, you know, 4 weeks of a customer's whole grocery order. And then they would come down and swipe their card at the end of the month.
Now, more than half of Mr. Mejia's customers are SNAP recipients, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So that's got to affect his business.
Yeah, absolutely. So, he said he lost 35% to 40% of the income. And I should add that what happens once you're accused of fraud is you're as good as kicked out of the program. So there's no phone call they make that says, hey, man, it looks like you have a lot of weird transactions. Do you want to explain yourself? All they do is send a letter, and then you fall into this appeals process that we'll talk about later. But what I'll say is that very few people are successful in appealing them. So Mr. Mejia, you know, he got his elderly customers to write letters to the USDA. When I was there months after this had happened, he still had a stack of letters on his desk that are kind of handwritten on notebook paper that say, please, this guy was just trying to do the right thing. So he lost 35% to 40% of his income. He's had to cut down on his workers' hours. He's now working 15, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week just to keep the place open. He's thinking about selling. And so it had this kind of massive impact on his business, because so many of his customers were relying on his ability to accept what the way they have to pay.
And so what can he do in that situation? What can businesses, like, what recourse do they have?
So they can appeal the decision, which he did. And what they have to do is provide evidence that they weren't engaging in fraud. But the USDA, their threshold for proving your own innocence is very, very high. So Mr. Mejia didn't have the type of cash register that includes individual items. So I'm sure you've been to a large grocery store when you go to Whole Foods or whatever, it prints out every single item you bought and gives you a total. But when you go to a corner store, you just get a total. And so the USDA needed these itemized receipts, but Mr. Mejia didn't even have the technology that would print that. And so he couldn't submit that. He submitted all of these letters, but of course, none of them really swayed the agency's decision. And then there's another layer of appeal you can do over that, which is administrative review, where you ask another part of the agency to look at your transactions and see whether or not they were fraudulent. And that also results in mostly failures. So I think only 20 out of 1,200 appeals were successful last year.
Yeah, you know, I miss going to a bodega. I used to go into bodegas all the time growing up in New York, and it's sad to see what's happening. You wrote that the USDA spends some $17 million per year to fight retailer fraud, or quote-unquote retailer fraud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a line item in the budget. They spend $17 million a year on this. They actually have two different programs. One of them is kind of this old school program that they've started phasing out when they started using the EBT cards, which is where they send undercover agents into the bodegas to sort of try and buy, you know, sponges, which you can't buy with SNAP, or to try and sort of catch retailers in the act. But most of the fraud decisions are made based on this algorithm.
So it's pretty much an overreaction.
Yeah. For context, I will say that the agency estimates about 1.5% of SNAP transactions are fraudulent. By contrast, the agency spends about 2.27% of the program's budget by accidentally overpaying people. And so if you think about it that way, the fraud itself is less impactful than essentially the agency's clerical errors in the course of a year.
And so how has the Trump administration responded to this?
So it's long been a Republican talking point going back to the Reagan administration to talk about fraud in the food stamp program and in the welfare programs more generally. The Trump administration hasn't said a whole lot publicly about food stamps, but they did introduce this proposal ages ago to replace half of food stamps with what's called a harvest box, which was this kind of dead on arrival proposal to give people boxes of canned food instead of their food stamps. The idea being that you could cut down on fraud by making sure people are getting actual food instead of giving people money to buy food. Now, Democrats, Republicans, the grocery industry, everyone hated that and it never happened, but that was one of the only times they directly addressed fraud.
So it's an almost like, well, not almost like, but I mean, when I go on a flight and I get one of those food boxes, I mean, those are bad enough and I have to pay for that.
Yeah.
So how successful have retailers been at repealing this? Have they combined and tried to advocate?
Not that I'm aware of. You know, I think folks are starting to talk about it. One of the advocates that I talked to who actually works, he doesn't work in SNAP fraud, but he works in trying to get bodegas to stock healthy food. And so his whole job is going around and talking to people about what's happening to them. He said he thinks this is happening to maybe half of the people he meets. So his impression was that the problem is very widespread. That said, I haven't heard much about organizing. I know there are lawyers out there that are starting to figure out how to better fight these charges. You know, there are a lot of things that are not intuitive that you just need to know, like sending itemized receipts. And if you don't do it on time, it's too little too late. But in general, I think it's still a widespread problem and for which there's not much of a coordinated response.
Well, Claire, thanks so much for joining me. We're seeing retailers like Mr. Mejia facing incredible pressure from e-commerce and now these regulatory assaults. I know that this administration tends to talk a good game about helping Main Street, but it's not clear how the Trump administration's policies are actually helping Main Street, much less Audubon Avenue. Avenue or in Manhattan or Grand Concourse in the Bronx. So thanks so much for shedding some light for us here. And we look forward to hearing more from you.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. And visit us at thenewfoodeconomy.org for more.
And are you ready for our icebreaker?
Sure. I thought we were finished.
Okay. So we'll get to that, your career hack and your pick for our book this week. Okay, so it's time for this week's icebreaker. The way it works is that I spin this wheel, almost like one of those wheels you have in Vegas. It spits out a random question, and then I ask it and you answer. Sound good?
All right.
Sure. All right, let's give it a shot. All right. If you could instantly become an expert in something, what would it be?
Ooh, wow. So many things. I would love to know more about how our data is bought and sold and who buys it and how much money they're making and what they use it for.
And how do you stay productive and successful, Claire? What are some career hacks? Can you give us some tips? Do you get writer's block?
I get writer's block all the time. The absolute best thing I can do is block myself out of Twitter. Right. I have the self-control app that I do for that. I turn my phone to black and white to try and stay off that during the workday. And then when everything fails, I shut everything down and take a 10-minute walk around the block. And that always helps.
What are you reading and watching these days?
I am reading Rebecca Traister's Good and Mad. It's a history of women's anger as a political force. It's utterly fantastic.
Well, thanks again, Claire, for joining me. What are some takeaways you'd like to leave with us, and where can we find you online?
I would just like people to give more thought to the problems retailers face when they're not the big retailers that can interface with the agency and figure out how to administer food stamps. Beyond our story, I'd like everyone to pay more attention to food policy. It's kind of a niche corner of the policy world, but we're at newfoodeconomy.org. We publish content about food policy every single day. And if you sign up for our newsletter, you can get our news on Tuesday and Thursday evenings. We often cover tech, and go to our website, newfoodeconomy.org, and sign up for the newsletter.
Awesome. And you've been listening to Claire Brown, award-winning senior staff writer at the New Food Economy. Claire, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
That concludes episode 169 of the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do, we'd love to hear from you. Please take a moment, head over to Apple Podcasts, give it a review. It helps others know what they can expect from the show and really helps us out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you back here next week. Take care.